Hello and welcome everyone to our test run, or show zero if you're being fancy, of the MZ show. This is Masala Zindabad, the podcast that ought to have been a book, and I am Amrita from IndieQuill.
And I am Beth from Beth Loves Bollywood. The first film we're going to discuss in our series is Gadar from 1973, that we both heard about from the also excellent Greta of Memsab story, who wrote this film up a few weeks ago, and neither of us had even heard of it, so we got it right away and watched it and wanted to include jump off our podcast series with it because it's just such a great film. If you want a detailed write-up, you can go to Greta's website at memsobstory.wordpress.com, and she was going to be with us today but is sick and decided not to cough throughout the podcast, which was nice of her, but we miss her very much. I have been tasked with summarizing the plot of this film in a few sentences, so I'll do my best. It is the story of a heist that goes wrong when one of the members of the crew of thieves runs off with the money, and the story follows the thieves from Bombay to the Himalayas as they try to track down the traitor and find out why he's taking the money and then get it back from him. The film stars a great lineup of actors that you usually see as villains or side roles or even small villain roles throughout films in the 70s, and it's just wonderful to see them all as co-stars in a really good ensemble piece. I'm going to stop the plot summary there. You can learn more details at Greta's site, and we will be talking about aspects of the plot as we go along, and I should issue the warning that there will be spoilers in this podcast, but the film is almost 40 years old, so I think that's okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about with this film kind of follows off my first point that it's just so fabulous to see all these actors together being co-stars, is that so many of the more complicated characters in the movie are the older characters, the older actors. So we've got people like Pran and Iftikhar and Madan Puri,
yes,
right? And and Anwar Hossain being the sort of richer characters, I would say. They do more, and they also, you learn a lot more about them and what motivates them. And it just, you know, I'm used to seeing Iftikhar as a police captain who's on the screen for a few scenes and does the right thing or helps solve the crime, but I don't really get to see him do very much in the films I've seen, and I loved that he got to do a role like this. And I mean, we all love Pran and have seen him do great things before, but I thought it was really great to see these guys having a lot to do and giving us a lot to think about as we sort of unraveled the mystery with them about why the characters were doing what they were doing. And it's rounded out with a few younger actors like Ranjit doing his usual thing. And there's a great picture on Greta's site where all the actors are standing around kind of talking about what they're going to do in the heist. And everyone's dressed in suits except Ranjit, who has on a mesh tunic unbuttoned halfway down with a big neckerchief. I mean, that's exactly why we watch these films, I think. It just, he's lounging and everybody else is standing up straight. It's a great scene. So he's in it, and who's the other younger guy? Manmohan?
I don't know the names of all these people as well as you do. I'm a lot more IMDb reliant, but what did surprise me was that Ranjit wasn't the rapist, you know.
That's true.
He stood up for one of the women. His one big fight was actually his whole problem with Vinod started because he was actually standing up for the doctor's wife when the doctor raised a hand to her. That was pretty cool.
That's a really interesting twist for him. We never see him be
that's
good.
That's true. And another thing was that it's so true that the older ones are the ones that get the complex characters, the backstories, because we didn't really get much information about the younger two, do we?
Oh, not at all. Not even Vinod's character.
No, he just shows up out of nowhere wearing this giant swastik medallion, and then he just sort of runs around beating up people.
With a kind of dubious mustache.
What, can we discuss that for a moment? Because Vinod looks definitely older than he's supposed to look in 1973.
It's so strange because we're all used to films having later dates than we know they were actually filmed, especially with someone like him, since he left the industry and his films were rolling out over a couple years after that. But he looks 10 years older than the year this film was released, and the certificate at the beginning even says 1973. So I don't know if it's the sort of almost mullet haircut or the mustache or what, but this is, you know, for people like me who love to watch him on screen, this is not the finest possible look, even though it should be, given what vintage it is. But when they get him out of the blue velvet tracksuit, things go a little bit better. But
that black tunic thing that he wears, the four cat suit in which he does the badassery in the snow. That's kind of like a hippie, like a modified hippie outfit. It's like a hippie outfit.
That makes sense.
Except it's in black, you know?
Yeah, and you see, there's a great, I can't remember what the movie is, but there's a great movie with Feroz Khan and Mumtaz where they both wear that outfit throughout in various colors and textures with like a lace-up top with the big belt and the sweater tunic. So it's a good look.
Totally,
I'm sure.
Remember that.
A Prod, is that what that movie is?
I think so. Is that the one? He's a race car driver in it?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I totally know what you're talking about. But I think of all the characters, that was the one that really shocked me was Pran. I mean, you said that he seemed to be the most principled of the lot. He was also like, he said that he was going to barbecue the kid with the fireplace poker. I mean, when he first picked it up, I thought he was going to do it to Yogita Bali. What's her name in it? Reshma? I thought he was going to start with the girl, but he didn't. He went straight for the toddler, which was shocking. And I totally believed it. Like, he sold that scene.
He's very convincing in the role, and he's so interesting because he has several speeches, if I can trust the subtitles, about he's not going to be a loser. He's not a loser, and he's not going to lose this time either. And he's so focused on getting this money back. And he kind of shifts around about what he's, you know, what he's going to go through to do it, and we see very soon that he's going to do it no matter what. But then he's also got this great scene, surprisingly emotional, with Iftikhar, and we shouldn't say what's going on in it, but it's beyond bromance. It's just this really affecting scene of their friendship. They talk about being lifelong friends. Iftikhar is a scientist, which you can tell because he has the vials of colored liquids, and our friend Bali viewer needs to see this for that. And he gets called Professor, so we have BK and Professor, and they've been friends for so long, and there's a couple really good scenes with them just being friends and being really comfortable with each other and without the other guys around, but especially towards the end, there's a really great scene of them together that I would never have guessed was coming in this movie, and I really loved it.
And, you know, another thing that Pran did was he totally proved my point about women's jewelry when he, I don't know if the subtitles got it, but when he's having his giant diva moment in the snow with Vinod in the air, he tells Vinod that, you know, men don't wear bangles, and that's when Vinod dangles the handcuffs in front of them.
That's right. And there's that great, they set it up so that you see Pran's face in the middle of the handcuff that Vinod is dangling. It's this really good, you know, it's a little cheesy, but it's also very satisfying, like he's in the noose of the handcuff.
But yeah, I mean, apart from his diva behavior towards the end of it, he was actually pretty good in it.
He is really good, and my other one exception to that is there is a huge string of fake coughing towards the end of it. They're outside in the snow, so yeah, breathing in that sub cold mountain air, but it doesn't match up with his mouth, and I can just imagine the dubbing for that would have just been ridiculous and hilarious and probably destroyed his voice. But there's, yeah, he goes over the edge a few times, but it's a great role for him. And anyone who loves him will love this film.
But that,
for that
also set up like one of the best scenes in the movie where he starts burning the money to fan his face with the flames.
It's one of those, you know, if I can't have it, nobody will kind of moments. And instead of it being about a woman, it's about cash. And then it just turns into this great funny moment. It's really good.
I especially loved Kanhaiya's reaction to that, which was just like, dude, are you actually going to set fire to all of this?
What is it, 40,000? No, 40, 40 bucks that they have in a metal suitcase that gets banged around throughout the movie, and he's just lighting it on fire. And of course, somehow he has something with him to light it on fire, even though they're chasing each other down a snowy mountainside, like someone's got a lighter and in their waistcoat pocket. Pran has a pretty good waistcoat for a lot of this film, so it was great.
He has a red waistcoat in this one. That's like pretty fly.
It is. There's a lot of, despite them only having really two or three outfits because they're off in the mountains, I guess they only brought one, you know, the one outfit. It's got some pretty fly fashion. I liked it a lot. If Tekkar has an entire entirely plaid suit that I think you're going to see on Andy Quill sometime soon, as soon as I send a picture of it. Oh, yeah. So speaking of outfits, there are very few women in this film. There is Padma Khanna, who plays a cabaret dancer, of course, who has information about the traitor that the men extract from her. And so you see her only for a few minutes, and she's in a pretty fantastic sparkly cabaret outfit, and she does a great song with a sort of Egyptian motif where she and her handmaidens kidnap, I think it's Oscar. Greta can clear us up on that, but I think it's the choreographer Oscar, who maybe is not the most choice specimen they could have chosen for their sort of lair of female pleasure, but he's in a heart-shaped swimming pool with all these women dancing around and giving him pineapples, but then it's very clear that he's there for their amusement only. And you all know how I like Egyptian set songs, so I got to add that to my list of Egyptian songs. But she's one of these characters that we had an interesting talk about this, because we're both people who are set off by how women are depicted and what happens to female characters in so many of these films. And she has information. They get it from her. And there's some very menacing looking scenes of all 8 or 9 of the men kind of crowded around her. And I was really afraid for what, yeah. And she's on a bed, and it's really creepy. And while she isn't raped, she's killed pretty quickly.
She's slapped around. Yeah. Like she's making sex noises.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, God, the moaning. There's so much moaning. So if you weren't looking at this, you would think something completely different is going on. And that combination of sex with violence or sexualized violence, even if that's not actually what's happening, it's all the clues are there. That just drives me absolutely crazy. I think it's just completely harmful and dangerous and minimizing of women. But so her character is kind of hard to watch. I thought, not because of her, but because of how it's written. And we had this discussion of, well, at least she wasn't raped. And we kind of went, our sort of written, you know, we do this over typed chat. So our little written out way to say this is ellipsis, yay, question mark. Like, at least she wasn't raped, but instead was shot and dumped in a sewer. Okay, yeah, I guess that's better. I don't know. That was hard to stomach.
She's actually has, I think, more. No, I don't think she has more time on screen than Yogita Bali, but there isn't a lot of role for women in this.
No,
and that kind of, it makes sense. For the movie.
It does.
There's a point towards the end where Reshma finds out that Vinod might not be such a bad character. And she has this whole expression of joy on her face, which completely took me aback, because he goes around saving every random person and trying to save the trapeze artist, who's also a criminal in his off time. I don't think there's anything to be really happy because he saved you from getting raped once. And there isn't any romance as such, even though they do flirt in the snow and she pulls him out of a snowdrift.
But there's no love song, there's no love song music even sort of playing in the background. It doesn't have that at all. And I can't say that I missed it. It surprises me a little bit. Usually I would, I think, but it's such an interesting and well-paced film otherwise that it wasn't missing. And though we do learn about the background of some of these characters, you don't learn anything that makes you think, oh, he'd be happy if only he had a good wife or whatever. No, there's nothing like that. So it doesn't matter. The romance would be completely irrelevant and you don't miss it at all.
Like, there were like a few backstories that got cut, like with the doctor.
I think you're right.
But with the romance thing, I don't think it got cut. I think that was basically all that was written.
Yeah, and I think Yogita's character almost could have been male.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have really mattered any. She could have been somebody's brother, or you know, she plays the daughter of a hotel owner, right? I think when they're in the, that's why she's there. So it makes sense that she's there, but she could have been a son instead of a daughter, and it wouldn't have made any difference. She is threatened with rape a few times by one of the younger thieves, but that could have just been another kind of violence, I think, and it wouldn't really have made a difference to the film. And she gets no awesome outfits at all, so that's a little sad.
She does look like Rekha Light. In the scenes,
mm-hmm. I think
was her original purpose to be Rekha Light? Do you know? Like, I have no idea.
Know.
Yeah, but she basically just sits there, and then she has this short speech in which basically provides the entire backstory for their family when she talks about her mother dying of disappointment and how she was a teacher and something or the other.
That's right.
This movie is actually really good at compressing information and putting it out there.
You're right. And there's a lot, with so many people, there's a lot of information to get out, and they do a good job of it. Oh, I wanted to talk about the setting of the, at least the second half, I'd say the sort of second two-thirds of the film are in a hotel in the mountains in the snow. I really liked the use of the weather and the environment in this film. You get all the thieves, including the traitor, sort of, I don't think they're actually snowed in, but it has the effect of them being snowed into this hostel.
They're supposed to be snowed in.
I mean, they certainly act like they are. And when you look outside, it seems like you could get out if you wanted to, but they don't.
They're
so
snowed
fine.
In in India.
True. We're not no snow tires around.
In the Midwest, they're not snowed in.
And to be fair, our snow is always on flat as opposed to Himalayan. Yeah. So I realized that would make travel a little more difficult. But you get a lot of, I think, heightened effect of them running around after each other because you see their breath, and you get that sense of desolation and isolation. And they never talk about running out of food, but it seems like that could be a possibility. And you get a very good reason for them to all be in the same room around a fireplace. And you get things like, I think there's a remote location that they go to a little bit too that you can see from the hotel. So the trek back and forth between these locations is a lot more arduous than it would be if they were just in a city and can drive around in Prawn's absolutely gigantic American 70s car. I don't know what kind of car it is, but you could fit all 10 of the thieves in it, no problem, for sure. But I thought that the snow in particular really added to the effect, and it's really pretty. So you get the scenes of trees coated with snow, and the mountains and clouds and the sky and the ground are all kind of that gray white of snow. And it's just really lovely that it added a lot.
And it also kind of provided a blank theater space when they were having their giant shootout in the snow when, you know, tension is running high. That's another thing, you know, in that particular shootout, the way that the amount of stuff that they let the kids see, I mean, there was no sense of, you know, here's a little child, maybe we shouldn't, you know, kill his father in front of him or something like that. Oh, no, yeah. Multiple times, let's just kill
him. Yeah, no, there's no remorse about that child, which is very interesting.
And although that kid was also pretty annoying, so I was like, well,
yeah,
you know, maybe he had it coming.
You definitely deserve to have your father shot in front of you, though. That'll teach you.
Keep quiet on the stairs when your father is creeping around the house.
It's so true. It's so true. The kid is not the sort of maximum level of annoyance we see from 70s child actors sometimes, but there's no reason for that character to really be there either, I don't think. But, you know, it makes for a nice sort of happy family moment here and there, I guess. Oh, also, in that hotel, there's a wonderful kawali with all the criminal actors doing a drunken song, and there are no women. I don't even remember if Yogita is in that scene.
I think she picks up the kid and she walks out in the middle of it.
Getting away from all that drunken debauchery. So the men are doing all the making eyes at each other and the hi hi and all that kind of stuff, and it's really fun. There aren't very many songs in this film. There are only three really, but that one, I think, packs a pretty big punch for what it is. And they're all, you know, one of them plays a bottle of, I think it's Vat 69, like an instrument, and they're, you know, they're doing funny things with their bottles and their glasses. And Vinod and Ranjit especially are kind of, you know, lounging around over the furniture and draping themselves around. And it's really funny. And I'm sure Greta posted a link to it, but you can find it on YouTube easily, I'm sure. And it's really good. It's really good.
Another thing that we could have had more of is the cabaret numbers. You know, there were just like two of them, and there were like two pretty good cabarets. But
yeah,
we could have more of those.
You made the point that with a movie with this many bad guys in it, you need more. Like the ratio of cabaret number to bad guy is way off.
Vinod is like the only person who actually gets to go to the second cabaret. I mean,
that's true. Yeah, it's that interesting montage of them looking for the traitor. And he nobly takes on the job of going to all the dance houses and everything to ask the dancers, have they seen, they show a picture, you know, have you seen this man kind of thing. And there's I don't know why I thought this was so funny, but there's a scene of him sitting in the front row to see the dancer, and he pulls the money out of his sock to give her in exchange for the information. It's just the least sexy thing you've ever seen Vin O'Connor do. And I've seen him do a lot of sexy things, but that one is bottom of the list. That was just, it was horrifying. You don't need to see the socks. It's not, I mean, I know that's a totally irrelevant point for me again, but it just, so, it was, just made me laugh so much. But yeah, and there's that string of great dancers. I don't know who any of these women are. I think they're all credited, at least they're listed on IMDb, and I don't know which one is which, but for any of our eagle-eyed listeners who want to fill in who's who from these great 70s dancers, that would be good, because a lot of them were really fun. I thought they didn't have a lot of time. But where would you have put some more cabaret songs? Because you can't really have them once they go up to the mountains. They're not going to, that would be a huge song, yes, teleport to get them back to a cabaret.
The Kavali is basically the only thing that you could have up there. Yeah, actually, that's like a pretty good point. It is pretty well-paced and well-structured for, you know, a movie of that vintage.
And it could have been such a mess with so many different characters in it. It could have gone all over the place, and it didn't at all. It's really contained, yet interesting, yet with context, which is a good bit of writing. I forgot to look who wrote it, but they did a good job.
And the older men all had really heartwarming stories to tell, too.
They did, and even one of them is especially filmy, but it still was really effective, I thought. I think we should not tell them what it is, because they'll enjoy finding out for themselves, but it's hinted at in the beginning, which I didn't notice until I went back and looked at some of my screen captures, but that was really good. It's a little bit silly, but it's also very emotional.
We haven't discussed that, you know, they have this amazingly awesome 1970s Target house where
we're going to go live there someday, and it's like blue-green, this huge palace, and you made the point that whoever did the set design of this film loved kind of Pepto-Bismol pink, like all these pink light bulbs, pink walls, and it's a bit much, but it's great.
It has a safe that's behind an electrified gate.
Mm-hmm. And the switch for that is behind a hanging picture on the wall.
It's not a switch, it's a keyhole that you have to insert a key into.
That's a keyhole, that's right there with those keys. And, oh, I forgot, one of the security guards presses the alarm button, which is literally a little piece of brown wood with a red circle in the middle where someone has hand-painted alarm over it. It's just, like, they could have left the word alarm off, and we all know what the red button means, especially if a guard presses it during a break. And it doesn't go with the house at all. I mean, that button should have been inside a tiger or something in the way this house was. And it's just, it was great. You're going to be seeing that on one of my rotating banners on my blog soon, I think. It was just so pleasing to me that, alarm! And that whole setup when Prawn goes around the city giving signals to his gang that they're supposed to assemble and get ready for this big heist is so cool. It is so cool. And we talked a lot yesterday about how this film makes us wish for time travel. And then we both went and saw Action Replay, which has time travel, and neither of us were particularly affected by. But this was, it's just so cool. And that's kind of the part I was referring to about at least watch the first 25 or 30 minutes of this film, even if you don't stick around for the rest of it, which I think you would because it's really good, but it's very stylish without being ridiculous, and it's tight and it's interesting and it's just really groovy and fun.
Can see why this isn't as beloved these days as some of the other action thrillers from the 70s.
There's not a huge amount of fighting in it. There's some, but there's no epic Dishoom kind of thing, and you know, because some of the actors are older, there's a lot more shooting and a lot less rough and tumble. There's some good, especially Vinod gets to fly over some counters and stuff like that. But it's mostly a lot of it's shooting. But there's a sneakiness to that, which I thought was
it's like a really great B movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing that you pick up if you like somebody on the cast. It's not something that you would pick up if you didn't know who was in it.
I think so. So let us be the ones to encourage you to pick it up if you have already read it. Yeah, because it's so good. There's one thing I know that we had wanted to talk about, and I don't think we did really, was back to the subject of the women. I think you and I both are usually annoyed when there aren't more female characters of substance in a film, because there's really only one in this movie, and she gets killed off early on because Yogita's character doesn't really do anything. I don't know where, like the songs, I don't know where I would have put any more women in this film and had them make sense, unless some of the thieves had been women, which would be cool. And we talked about how there should be a female version of this film with, like, Aruna Irani leading up a crew of 8 female thieves, and it could be all the sort of moms and dancers that never get big, juicy roles in the 70s, and they, oh, that'd be so good. But we're gonna write that, and then when the time travel thing is possible, we'll go back and make it. But the, you know, on paper, I kind of missed that there weren't more women, but it didn't bother me in this film the way it usually does, because I don't know where they would have gone.
I think we missed a chance with the nurse that was married to the doctor, because she had like a definite backstory, and
she was there quite a bit, but she didn't really do anything, did she? Yeah, you see her a lot.
She was proactive. When her husband was like, "Oh no, I'm not gonna save any of these people because they're criminals, and I'm a crap doctor," and she was like, "Well, I'm a nurse, and screw you, I'm gonna do something about it."
That's true. She had a good ethical sense and spoke out about it. I totally forgot that. That's good. What else is on our list of things to say about this great film?
So basically, go watch Gaddar.
It's great. You'll definitely enjoy it. And you know, if you live in a place where it gets cold, take a nice snowy Saturday afternoon. And I mean, it's a good one. And for those of, you know, for my non-Indian friends who have friends who are like, why do you watch Indian films? Whatever. This would be a great one to show people who aren't, you know, who haven't seen a lot of Hindi films, because I think the basic structure of thieves with a traitor translates to so many cultural settings that this would be a good one you could show people. And it doesn't have, because it doesn't have a lot of any romance and very few songs, you're not going to get any kind of, aren't those movies all about romance and songs? You know, so if you're looking for an intro film or a film to show people that maybe haven't seen a lot of Indian popular films, this would be a good one, I think. I don't know. I might test it out on a few of my friends and see what they think. But I would add it to that list too.
I'm kind of in two minds about that, because I would think that if you were a non-Bollywood watcher and you were watching Gaddar, then you would just think to yourself, well, but Hollywood makes a better version of this.
True. We talked yesterday a little bit about how we wonder if Ocean's 11 was any kind of influence on this film, and I think the original Ocean's 11 is so boring, despite the fun Rat Pack cast and the Las Vegas thing. I love the remake, but I think the original is just pretty dreadful. And if it was an influence on this film or any part of a seed idea, and I'm certainly not going to claim that Ocean's 11 was the first kind of story to do this. I'm sure it wasn't. I just don't know what earlier versions are. That, like I said, whoever wrote this and the director, who I also don't have at my fingertips, they did an amazing job with wherever they got this idea from. It's a, you know, a pretty classic set of things to do, I guess, but it's really effective.
So go watch Gaddar.
Absolutely, a big recommendation.
How do we sign off?
I don't know. We haven't thought of that yet. We'll come up with a good catchphrase.
Okay. And this was the test run for Masala Zindabad, the podcast that ought to have been a book.
I'm just waiting for someone to say, make it a book, make it a book.